All right, welcome to Session 2, Question and Answer of the Advanced SCD Techniques course. I'm Jordan Reisner, and I'm here tonight with Stephen Wright. Okay, so over the past few weeks, we've gone through a lot of material, and we've shown you how to use a lot of subtle clues from your body to keep tweaking and to find the custom version of SCD that's going to fit and heal your body. And we've shown you the top 6 supplements for healing in week 2 and how to tell which ones might be right for you. We've also covered, in the latest training session, the impact of social integration and how important it is for your healing. And then, not only that, but how to make it happen and stay on SCD. But we just want to take a minute and talk about the fact that the underlying theme among all of these things has been testing. And if you're not feeling good, if you're not at your feel-good zone, then you got to keep testing. You got to test your food. You got to test your supplements. And by all means, test having some fun. Because each of these tweaks might just be the one thing that actually leads to your custom version of SCD. And each one is of equal importance. I can't stress that enough. So for example, tweaking your foods might not matter if you can't digest fats. And in that case, you need to get some digestive enzymes to help you get to that feel-good zone plateau. Or another example might be if you're still eating dairy and you can't seem to introduce any new foods, you can't figure out what's going on, you're taking digestive enzymes, you're taking probiotics. Well, test removing dairy for a while and see how that goes. The bottom line and the biggest takeaway that we want you to remember during the first 3 training sessions is never settle for not reaching your feel-good zone. Keep testing each of these 3 areas and focus on constantly making tweaks.
That's all good stuff, Jordan. And I just want to interject really quickly and just talk about a little bit of what we're seeing and some of the feedback we've been receiving. And what Jordan just talked about was the fact that you're tweaking lots of different things. You're tweaking foods, you're tweaking supplements, you're tweaking probably prescription drugs, social aspects of all this. And I just want to talk to a small minority of people who have really done exactly what we've talked about as far as food tweaking, and they've gone on the 5-day diet, or they've removed all the 4 horsemen, and what they saw was they got slightly better. And by slightly better, I mean they actually got like 100% better. They went from maybe 10 bowel movements and some blood down to 5 bowel movements a day and just a little bit of blood. Or they went from having diarrhea all day long to now they just have a little bit of loose stools, but they have it like 3 or 4 times a day. And they know from what we've taught so far that they're not in their feel-good zone yet, but they've seen immense improvement, and now they're sort of stalled out because they're on a more basic diet, maybe a derivation of the 5-day diet, or all phase 1 foods, and they haven't really gone any farther yet. And the point that I wanted to make is that at this point, if your symptoms have leveled off and are now kind of stable in this new medium health zone, it's not quite the full zone we're looking for, but it's a really good start. First of all, you should be really happy about that. And then the second thing is that don't be afraid to start adding back in some veggies and fruits that are cooked. And if you're pureeing, maybe stop pureeing, because we want you to continue to progress on the foods. And it's really clear at this point, if you're not eating any of the 4 horsemen, that foods aren't your last sticking issue, that there's actually something else going on here. So you need to move on from the food tweaks, keep yourself engaged in the diet, and start adding stuff back in the phased order. But start looking at the bigger things, like maybe your social life or some stress levels, some sleep levels, and your prescription medications and your supplements. Because now the tweak that you're going to need to find is something much bigger than just removing a food, because you've already tried that. So that's just something I want to interject in there from what we've seen and some feedback we've gotten. Jordan, you want to take off from there?
Yeah, that was a great summary. So I'm gonna take that, and with that said, I'm gonna dive right into the first question here. You ready to rock?
Yeah, dude, let's do this.
Okay, great. This is from Joanna, and she has a great question here because she found something that we missed in session 2. So in session 2, you guys talked about some optional supplements to try. I'm interested in adding vitamin B12 to my repertoire. I have the methylmate from New Beginnings Nutritionals, but I'm not sure how much to take. I think this was the only one in the lecture where you didn't give a specific recommendation as to how much to take and when to take it. Thanks, Joanna.
Great question, Joanna, and great catch on us missing something there. So with the New Beginnings Nutritionals, each drop out of that dropper is 1,000 micrograms. And from the research that I've done, It looks like the minimum dosage that you're going to be wanting to take is about 2,000 micrograms per day, and that's if you do the orally. This is, does not pertain to actual B12 injections at all. So I'm only talking about oral supplementation of B12 right now. And so the minimum dosage you want to take is about 2,000 micrograms, and about the maximum you're going to want to take, unless you've gone to the doctor and you know for sure that you have a significant vitamin B12 deficiency, is about 5,000 micrograms per day. So that's 2 drops to 5 drops under your tongue per day. And you can do those in the morning, or you can do those with food. It's not not a big deal either way. Just whatever is convenient and something that you can do with, you know, with your life, and you won't forget, that kind of thing. And then what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to supplement for about 2 months at either 2,000 or 5,000 micrograms per day. And the reason why there's a range there is because there's some debate as to whether we can use all of the orally taken B12. So some doctors you'll see recommending 2,000 micrograms. Others will say 5,000 micrograms because they believe that some of the B12 is destroyed in the digestive system before we can assimilate and use it. But regardless, pick one of the two levels and then test it for 2 months. And then you're going to want to go to your doctor and request a vitamin B12 serum level test. So it's a blood level test. And the ranges that you're going to find in your lab report are going to be about, they're going to call you deficient if you're between 0 and 400 or 300 picograms per milliliter. Now, my research suggests that you want to be at least above 400 picograms and probably higher than 600 picograms per milliliter. And just to put this in a scale for you that you might understand a little bit more, as a newborn, most of us start off with about 2,000 picograms per milliliter in our blood. So there's really no risk here of going too high. There's no risk of acute toxicity with B12 or overdosing. They've had studies where people have gotten up to 200,000 picograms per milliliter, and they were fine. So don't worry about any of that stuff. But it is a good idea after 2 months of supplementing to go get your levels checked so that you have a reference range of where you're at.
That's all good stuff, Steve. And I'll just interject that for the methylmate, each 5 drops actually contains 1 serving on the label. So each 5 drops is 1,385 micrograms. So if you wanted to take the 2,000 per day, you would want to take 8 drops a day.
Oh, good catch, man. Okay, well, let's roll on then. So the next question comes from Frank, and I'm going to feed it to you here, Jordan. It's a bit long, so stay with me. So he's thanking us, and, you know, that's great. Thank you, Frank. So his question is regards to supplementation recommendations for after surgery. He's just had surgery to retrieve a camera capsule and have a strictureplasty, and that was just last week. So he really wants to talk about what's the right track post-surgery. And I think this is a really great question because this would kind of also apply to other people who might have colonoscopies coming up because he had to go through the same protocol for it. So here's his current supplements and dosages. The surgeon has indicated that all supplements should be discontinued 1 week prior to surgery. So I plan on discontinuing all supplements today. However, Dr. Hoffman, who I'm a patient, had indicated that I should continue the 50 milligrams per day of zinc right up until surgery. I would also like your recommendations regarding digestive enzymes as they really seem to help at mealtime. And is it safe to continue right up to surgery? I would like to do so. Any other recommendations regarding supplements that I should continue up through surgery would be appreciated. So his current supplements look like this. Intensive by Proper Nutrition, 4 capsules every morning before breakfast. Methylcobalamin, 1 tablet before breakfast. That's 5,000 micrograms of B12. Maxi Gamma, which is a vitamin E supplement, 1 tablet per day, total of 720 milligrams. Zinc chelate, 1 tablet per day with each meal. 20 milligrams, vitamin D3, 1 tablet per meal, 5,000 IUs, SD complete by GI ProHealth, Lactobacillus acidophilus from Clear Labs, 1 capsule a half hour before, 2 after-hours a meal, glucosamine and MSN by Blue Bonnet with vitamin C, 1 to 2 tablets per day with meals. He's also been prescribed Mariva by Thorne Research and a clinical EPA DHA by Natural Clinician. That's by his doctor. So he'd be grateful if you could provide recommendations on when to resume supplementation after surgery and at what specific doses. He'd also like to hear more about our thoughts on higher levels of EPA, DHA, betaine HCL, and B-complex for post-surgical recovery. Also, if you'd have any specific recommendations for how to apply SCD diet post-surgery, that would be great also. He's planning on preparing his own bone broth for the first 1 to 2 days when I'm allowed to only have liquids, along with SCD-compliant homemade grape juice popsicles, as I don't want to get stuck with the hospital food that will surely be non-compliant and or non-helpful for my recovery. Beyond that, I'm planning on introducing the SCD chicken carrot soup, peeled and pureed squash, hard-boiled eggs, and other SCD intro diet foods for the first 3 to 6 days. Thanks for everything, and look forward to hearing you. Okay, thanks, Frank. Great question.
All right, thanks, Steve. Okay, so Frank, awesome work, you know, trying to understand and really have some strategy about how you're going to approach before and after the surgery. And the first thing is, you know, the most important thing you can do leading up to a surgery like this or like a colonoscopy and then immediately afterwards is take as many probiotics as you can. You're going to want to ramp up your beneficial bacteria leading up to the colon prep. And then immediately afterwards, you're going to want to take as much probiotic to replenish the beneficial bacteria as you can from the colon prep clearing you out. You know, if you have to, you can break open the capsule and just swallow the powder, especially if you're taking the GI Pro pills. I know that from my experience, those are completely tasteless if you just take the powder. Sometimes you can put it right on your tongue and swallow it. Especially if they put you on a normal round of antibiotics after the surgery. When you're having a stricture pasty like that, you may encounter some antibiotics just as a precaution. So the most crucial thing you can do is to take probiotics. Same thing, again, like coming out of a colonoscopy prep. In terms of the other things, you know, you always want to ask your surgery doctor what his or her feelings are about your supplementation pre- and post-surgery. And then as well as when to take whole foods again. But just in terms of what's going on in your body and the pathology of the surgery, you're going to want to look at post-surgery supplementation of B-complex, and then I wouldn't see betaine-HCL as being a problem. I'd definitely stick to the 1 B-complex a day unless blood testing revealed some other issues. Betaine-HCL as normal. Now, one thing to be cognizant of is, you know, fish oil, EPA, DHA is going to help with inflammation, but again, there's that risk of decreased ability to clot blood. So you always want to check with your doctor with those. I think Frank actually just emailed us today and said his doctor recommended specifically for him he could go up to 4.5 grams per day. But again, you're always going to talk to your doctor specifically because of the high risk of decreased clotting. But after that, you know, you can give your body a chance to heal and then talk to them about ramping up your dosage, you know, if your symptoms aren't where you really want them to be. But with so many other variables, you know, it's a risk that you don't want to necessarily push when you're talking about a specific surgery like that. Yeah, I don't see where enzymes would interfere with anything leading up to the surgery, but again, you know, we're not doctors, so that's a tough one, but that's only going to help you. The zinc also will help your immune system, you know, in the long run too. So that's always going to help when you're talking about coming out of a surgery. Your plan sounds really good for the food after the surgery. Try to make as much of it as you can beforehand. Freeze it if you have to and have someone bring it to you. If you're going to look at the grape juice popsicles, just I'd say keep those in moderation. You'll keep that in mind. It can be tough you know, with all the sugar that has in those. But I don't think you need to feel like you necessarily have to restart the diet all over again. You don't have to strictly follow the intro diet, but the chicken broth is going to do really good things for you, especially if you have to maintain a liquid diet. That's going to get you a lot of good healthy fats and vitamins and minerals. Just keep those enzymes going to make sure that you can process that well. The most important thing you could do probably to heal and recover from the surgery is to just focus on diet and healing your gut, you know, and just have those foods ready as soon as you're out. I know it's been a couple days since you've been out, so hopefully you've been doing okay with those. But all in all, I think your plan was well prepared. Just make as much food as you could beforehand, you know, and focus on getting better afterwards and just heal. So I look forward to hearing an update from you, man. Hope things went well.
Yeah, I think the big thing there, Jordan really hit on it, is that, you know, I hope things went well for you, Frank. But, you know, you're going to see a little bit of a change, obviously. You just had to prep for this, and then they've just gone in there and done some work. So expect a week or two of, you know, fluctuations. So it's really You don't want to introduce too much stuff too fast and really play around with stuff that you don't know and that isn't proven right away. You kind of want to let things settle a little bit before you start tweaking too much.
All right, excellent, excellent. I'm going to keep rolling. This one is from Nate. He says, hey, guys, great job. Thanks, Nate. A few things I wanted to know more about were chelations and where I might be able to get more info on this. Where did you guys find the info? I'm still having a watery stool when I first sit down, and then it turned somewhat solid. Any thoughts? I thought it might be the GI Pro Health multivitamin that I started a week ago, but I don't know. I've stopped them for a couple days to see if it makes a difference, but so far, nothing. When introducing the supplements, I know the four-day rule, but if we are introducing food at the same time, should we hold on the food, or is introducing both at the same time okay? Do you know of any stores that carry the supplements you listed, or is the only option online?
Okay, Nate, thanks for the question. All of them are great. I'll try to touch on them all. So the first thing about the chelations, so chelate is a combination of a metal with an organic molecule, and it forms like a ring-like structure on a macular level, on a very small level, and this is called the chelate. And the chelation of these metals, it either inhibits or enhances the bioavailability depending on what metal is chosen for the chelate. What organic molecule is chosen for the chelate, because what we're chelating are metals such as zinc or magnesium. So what it does is that ring structure helps protect it from the digestive tract because it makes it more stable bonds, and it helps keep them away from oxidation reduction reactions and any other interactions with enzymes as the mineral travels through the digestive tract. Now, I got to be honest with you, the jury's still out a little bit on the different sciences on which chelates are the most bioavailable, available, which ones help, which ones hurt. But from what I've seen is that it's pretty common now for everyone to agree that anything that's an oxide usually is not very bioavailable. And by bioavailable, I mean even though you take it, you might not be able to harvest it from your digestive tract and then assimilate and use it in your body. So you obviously want a higher bioavailability than a less. So I would stay away from anything that has an oxide at the end, such as magnesium oxide, zinc oxide. And the glycinates and the malates seem to be what most doctors and researchers are recommending at this point as far as being better absorbed. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't pull out like the whole book here. I did a lot of quick searching on the internet, and then I tried to pull up a few studies on PubMed. And the science is just... it's kind of hard to come by at this point, but if you're really still interested in it, if you don't want to just take the glycinates and the malates for things to order, also the other things are carbonates and citrates. Those are also fine to order for your supplements. Basically, those four are the top four sort of chelations that you'll see most supplements using. Just search out bioavailability of the different supplement that you're looking for and see what comes up. But it does matter. The different minerals, they have different bioavailabilities per the chelations. Okay, so to go back up to the watery stool when you first sit down, I don't think that's the multivitamin at all. I've never heard of a multivitamin doing that, and I think you did an awesome test there, and you found out that, nothing changed, so that means it wasn't the supplement. I think maybe you might have something going on there with the water. I don't know if you drink a lot of water during the day, but you might try that. Try drinking less or more. You also might try using some salt. Maybe you're not retaining enough water and you're pulling water into your large intestine and excreting it. I'm not sure. So that might be something to try, is maybe like a quarter teaspoon or a whole teaspoon of salt mixed throughout your day. See if anything changes there. Then going on to the digestive supplements and how do you introduce supplements and foods? Do they both follow the four-day rule? Which is a great question. And I want to draw a little bit of a line in the sand and say that some supplements are either for other health problems or general health, such as multivitamins or B-complex, and some are more specific to digestion and what we're specifically trying to do with digestion. So those would be enzymes, probiotics, betaine ACL, any antifungals, glutamines, bitters, any fish oil that were specifically targeting digestion-related processes with those supplements. And then there's also a lot of other supplements, such as the zincs, the B-complex, the multivitamins. These are more like whole health-supporting supplements. So with those more whole health-supporting supplements, those can be introduced at any time. You don't have to wait the 4 days because theoretically and in practice, we haven't seen those affect digestion ever. The other digestive supplements should be introduced on the four-day rule and keep your food steady when you do that, just to see if you notice anything change, especially things like probiotics and enzymes and betaine. So I don't know if I missed anything there, Jordan. Did you catch anything?
Sure, I'll just add a couple things. With the watery stool, when you first sit down and having it turn solid, that reminds me of we follow a guy, Dr. Chris Kresser, and he talks about, he's coined this term, consteria. And it's essentially where, you know, you're struggling with some constipation, and I'm not sure, Nate, if that's something you've been dealing with. I would default towards diarrhea with you for some reason, but if you're dealing with some constipation and you're having the watery stools in the beginning and they're moving towards more formed, you might actually be dealing with just constipation there, and you might just be seeing that because your body's sort of drawing water into the colon as a last-ditch effort to get things going. In that case, you want to up your probiotics as much as possible and then focus on keeping those fats up and make sure you're taking those enzymes. But probiotics and fats are really going to be the things that might stabilize that more. And then as long as you're taking enzymes too, that might help. The other thing is, in terms of asking about where stores carry supplements that we've listed, I've tried places around in the central Michigan area like BetterHealth. They really don't have a lot of what we recommend. Most of it contains illegal ingredients. I've only found Natural Calm, which is a magnesium supplement we recommend. I've only found that at a Whole Foods or a Better Health store here in Michigan. But I always default to the internet because I always end up saving way more money. And money's always a concern. And things are just so much cheaper online, even with shipping. So those are my best thoughts there on that.
Okay, cool. Let's move on to the next question from Nate. So he didn't notice any change when he took out the multivitamin and has since started taking again. He did, however, realize that he was eating a ton of butternut squash and that he read that it was high in sugar content. So he's since taken it out. Most days I have turkey sausage with coconut oil, homemade. For lunch, I usually have whatever protein I had for dinner the night before, chicken, steak, turkey, fish, along with a vegetable. Currently, I'm eating green beans, zucchini, spinach, asparagus with no problems. I do the same for dinner. I'm eating about a half to one full cup of fruit a day. The fruit is new about a week. I occasionally have watered down grape juice. For supplements, I'm taking 3,600 milligrams of betaine with meals, 2 pills of digestive enzymes, 40 billion CFUs of probiotics a day, 6 pills of the GI Pro Health multivitamin, and just received the Omega Max fish oil in the mail today. I've been doing some changing around with medication with my doctor. I'm currently taking sulfazine, 500 milligram tablets three times a day, or twice a day, along with some mesomelline enemas. I have been on the diet for 6 weeks, and for the first time today, I had a number 5 poop with no blood, no gas, and hardly any urgency or pain. I'm a little hesitant to celebrate, but have been feeling pretty good the past couple of days. I'm looking to introduce avocado in the next couple of days and maybe try squash again. Please let me know what you think.
Awesome, Nate. Well, thanks, man. You filled in some blanks there. We always like to answer every question that gets sent in so you can get our perspective on it. And so I'm glad to hear that you're at a number 5 with no blood. That's awesome. No gas, no urgency, no pain. That's huge, man. Congratulations. I just want to celebrate that a little bit. You should feel pretty good about it. So it sounds like things are definitely moving in the right direction. I understand that you're a little hesitant to celebrate, but as long as you know you're seeing this consistently over 3 to 4 days, that's a trend that is something you can hang your hat on. So introducing avocado is probably a good idea. It's a very, very good healthy fat. There's a lot of calories there. Since you are on the digestive enzymes and you're up to 2 pills at every meal, I would definitely test avocado. Start with one a day. Maybe have it with dinner or with breakfast, as long as you're taking those 2 enzymes and you're also taking the betaine. So, I wouldn't hesitate. I think it's going to be a good result for you. In terms of your specific question, multivitamins are protective and most people are not going to notice any detectable changes. They're basically an insurance policy, so you know, you might not necessarily need to cut out the butternut squash. You know, just the really the big thing you want to focus on is trying to sustain the no blood for as long as possible until you get to your food, your feel good zone. You just had a huge breakthrough, so be cautious with the fish oil. You know, maybe start with 1 gram of the EPA DHA and build up to 4 grams a day. But really focus in on that blood. That blood is a big trigger to notice when things are going the wrong direction. So if you do test something, for example, avocado, and you see some blood come back, you're definitely going to want to back that off and try to get back to the no blood. That's a huge plateau that you want to stay at. And it's a good sign that, that your healing is headed in the right direction. All right, good question, Nate. So let's keep rolling. Steve, this is for you. All right, so the pattern that I'm easing into appears to be vastly reduced blood and still some watery fives mostly, but nowhere near the D of 30 days ago. Awesome, awesome, another success plateau here. I had to rely on another Larabar 2 days ago, so I find myself cheating every 7 days with a Larabar. It appears, especially on days I feel really good. I've gotten really terrible sleep the past 2 days due to some traveling over the weekend, and I cheated with another Larabar with some chocolate in it. Yet I did not regress much at all yesterday and today, which may be a sign that I'm building up some improvement myself. And I'm not, for some reason, we did not copy the question.
The question's from Andy, but he asked several questions, so we'll be fielding the questions from Andy for a while
yes.
here.
Thank you, Steve. All right, so that's the first part of the question from Andy. Take it away.
Okay, cool. I guess just to start off, first of all, be really impressed, and I'm thankful that you're making great progress. I think that's awesome. You should definitely take a moment and be proud of what you've done so far because you made some really huge steps, and so that should be a cause for celebration. And, I mean, to me, I'm not really sure how you're eating the Larabars, what kind of mindset you're in when you end up eating them. You know, we're about to get heavy into that on Thursday night. But it sounds like you might be using them sort of as a reward or a treat. And this could be totally off base, but if this is the pattern, you might want to try to figure out a different one. And by different one, I mean a different reward or treat. So if you're getting stressed out or you're traveling and you feel like you're in a pinch or something, maybe try to find a different fruit combo that you really like, or maybe some fruit with the yogurt that can be a treat. Maybe you have a special meat like steak or something that you want to treat yourself to as a celebration. Or in the case of traveling, maybe you should, you know, definitely try to plan ahead if you can, and maybe use some turkey sausage or something instead of the Larabars. And it's not that the Larabars are inherently bad, and as you've proven, you've ate them and you haven't regressed at all, which is normally what most people will find when they do it every 7 days. But what seems to happen is that we revert back to the idea of processed food, and it's convenient food. It's also higher in sugar, so it's kind of a reward mechanism. It's really easy to grab. And sometimes things that are a every 7 day habit all of a sudden turn out to be an every other day habit, and then that's when we start seeing issues with people. So when you see the frequency pick up, or you start having like, you know, it's a Friday night and you're happy and you're like, man, I could really go for a Larabar, that's when a little flag should go off in your head and you should maybe try to revisit those feelings and try to redirect them a little bit. And that basically just comes down to the fact that Larabars are processed food. They're made in a manufacturing facility. They're higher in sugar. And so inherently with them comes risks. So just be aware of that. I had a similar occurrence where I started eating them and they became, you know, instead of just a travel security food, they became like an everyday food. And then it was like a 2 or 3 times a day food because they taste so amazing. And then I definitely started seeing regressions. So I'm just talking from experience here. Maybe you won't have the same experience, but that's what I would expect.
All right. Nice work, Steve. I think you seeded it a little bit, Steve, but that was a good answer. And I think we're going to dive more into this in session 4. So that's exciting. And I'm going to read the next part of his question here. If I can maintain strong for 7 days in a row with pure phase 1 food, I hope to see more changes during the bathroom visits. I'm starting goat's milk yogurt today. I've been on GIPRO-Health probiotics for 21 days, and before that I was on other types of probiotics for 1 month, and also SCD yogurt heavily from December 2010 to May 2011, until I restarted SCD. I'll try some yogurt tonight and then drip the rest. Did you say that it would be smart to ease into the yogurt, like maybe a half or one cup only tonight or less? Thanks.
Great question, and I would say, yeah, it's probably a good idea to ease back into the yogurt. And that just comes from the perspective that, remember, one cup of SCD-legal yogurt is over 700 billion CFUs of probiotics. And so even if you've been using these other probiotics, normally you're under 50 billion a day. So like a half cup is going to be 350 billion organisms, and then, you know, a quarter cup is going to be around 200 billion. So I would say it's smart maybe to do a quarter or a half cup for 2 days and then go up to one cup and just see how it goes. But I think just the payload of the probiotics is a reason to sort of step your way into it so you can build up tolerance. So let's keep moving on Andy's questions here, a couple for Jordan. So nowadays getting into a routine, the biggest question still remains realistic expectations for what to expect as we move through this, especially during phase one and move into phase two, etc. For me particularly, should the D be disappearing into pure fours and threes, or is still some water okay?
That's a good question. You know, I would move on into phase two now that your symptoms have improved so much. But, you know, you're not inside the feel-good zone yet, and that's what I'm hearing you say. So you've made some great changes, and you've tried taking some foods out. So now, you know, we need to find the next big step that will help you up to the next level. And like 99% adding new foods won't hurt and will probably help. So instead, you might need another supplement, maybe some more sleep, or just maybe some more time to heal at this point.
Yeah, I think he kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, he just was seeing some really good success after making some changes. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, you're going to still see a little fluctuation as you come into your feel-good zone. So I think that's kind of normal, maybe like four good days, one bad day, that kind of changing over. So let's keep going here. He did the stomach acid test, and he didn't burp at all. Now I'm wondering if I should pursue a real test or try some HCL supplements. I'm going to re-review your supplement seminar and see what I might apply from it.
Yeah, that sounds great. And, you know, just the big thing there is with betaine, and you'll see that in session two on supplements, is that if you're on NSAIDs, you know, or specifically steroids, you want to talk with your doctor or just really understand that you're at a higher risk for potential to aggravate any gastric bleeding that might be going on. You could also pursue what's called a Heidelberg test, where they'll actually send a pill into your stomach, and it actually gives radio frequency feedback of your stomach's ability to control the pH level as different pH changes are induced. So that's a very scientific, more official test to gauge how your stomach reacts and how well you're able to release HCL on your own. So that might be an option as well. All right, excellent. We're going to roll on to the next question, which is actually also from Andy. I thought of another question for the Q&A since this was mentioned in your podcast. I have a colonoscopy coming up in July. What can I do regarding the opportunity to work with a cleansed gut? Should I take probiotics immediately afterwards, etc.? I remember hearing on one podcast that having a colonoscopy and a completely cleaned out intestine caused a flare-up and full-blown UC for some people. So do you know of anything that can be done to counter the potential, etc.? And my other first question is just more description of the feel-good zone so you can know when we're in it. Thanks, Andy.
Okay, cool. Great question. So, you know, in a colonoscopy, you're going to do colonoscopy prep, and you're going to blow out basically all of the bacteria, good and bad, or lots of it, as you go through that and go through the diarrhea. So at this time, the best thing that we can tell you is just to use whatever your doctor would like you to use to prep for it. But as your probiotic is coming up, as your colonoscopy is coming up, you are going to want to up your probiotics to sort of, you know, you want to build up the good bacteria, build up the troops, and build up the army in your gut before you, you know, have diarrhea all over the place and get rid of a lot of them. So, you know, 1-2 weeks ahead of time, make sure if you moved on to the yogurt by that time, Andy, you know, be eating 1 to 2 cups a day. Keep doing your probiotics, you know, 40 to billion or so a day. And then afterward, like you said, you're going to have a little bit more cleaned out, basically, perspective. So what you can do there is really up everything then. You know, get the probiotics maybe up to 40 to 80 billion a day, somewhere in there, and keep the acidity yogurt really high. The other thing you might want to do is after the colonoscopy is over, you know, be up on the fish oil and get lots and lots of sleep, because you're going to want to let everything rest in there and heal back up. The other thing is, due to all the diarrhea, you're probably going to be dehydrated, so you're probably going to want to make something like the SCD electrolyte drink, which is just honey, water, baking soda, and salt all mixed together and heated up. There's a specific recipe for that on SCDdiet.com, or if you're lazy like me, you can just take a glass of water and just do a shake of salt and a shake of baking soda in it, and then swirl some honey in it, put it in the microwave, and heat it up for about a minute, minute and a half. The other thing that you could do before the prep and then after the prep, if you wanted to really have your electrolytes really high, is use one of the buffered vitamin C powders we talked about in the supplement seminar. That's the one that has the vitamin C, the magnesium, calcium, and the potassium in it. So that's going to cover basically everything except for sodium, and the electrolyte drink will cover that part of it. And then if we want to move on to a bit more of like what the feel-good zone is, that's a really good question, and it is going to be kind of different for everyone. But like we talked about, I believe in session one, was that it's you're going to have on the Bristol stool chart, you're going to have a quality of stool that's somewhere between a 3 and a 5. So, you know, we usually talk about perfect poops being a 4. A lot of people in their feel-good zone will be having maybe 3s and 5s on a regular basis and only a 4 every once in a while. But 3s and 5s are still great poops, very sustainable and healthy. So don't you know, freak out if it's not the perfect thing. You're going to be wanting to go into the bathroom probably on a regular basis, at least once a day. Sometimes people go every 3 times a day, like after every meal or something. So maybe if you ate 5 meals a day, you might go 5 times a day. And that's just your own normal body processy. So that's why that's kind of unique to each individual. You really shouldn't be experiencing any blood at all. You should not really have any other symptoms. You might still not be at your desired weight. You might still be dealing with a little fatigue. But really what we talk about with the feel-good zone is really you're able to go through every day and not really worry about horrible cramping or gas, blood, or uncontrollable bowel movements. That's really what we're talking about there. Okay, so great questions, Andy. And we're going to have one more from you, I guess. So this one's Jordan, give you a go. So when he started out, he started losing weight from the reduced calories. Or when we were starting out and losing weight from reduced calories, did we have energy problems? I didn't get the best sleep this week and was dragging today like I never have before. I hit a point of near exhaustion around mid-afternoon and took a nap. I'm barely getting 1,500 to 2,100 calories a day, and even with heaping amounts of coconut oil. And I'm used to getting 3,000 to 4,500 calories a day. That's a lot of calories. I've lost 10 pounds in 30 days, going from 165 to 155, and I think I better stop this trend, smiley face. Any advice would be much appreciated. I'm 30 plus days in and thinking of trying bananas or avocado in the next 4 days, as my fitdata.com tells me that I'm getting less than 30% of the potassium. Thinking that I should increase some potassium intake. As far as progress through phase one, I'm seeing vastly reduced blood and some days of slightly watery force, a big improvement overall since May 20th. And my food is basically the meat, spinach, carrots, squash, and chicken soup. No grape juice, as I think it was holding me back, and I'll be reintroducing that soon. I think one day of goat's milk yogurt gave me some regression in the BM, so I'll give another 20 days before retrying. Thoughts or suggestions? I'm taking the GI Pro Starter Kit supplements and no B vitamin yet.
All right, Andy, great question. And the first thing I'll comment on is just awesome work using fitday.com. You wouldn't believe the amount of people that we talk to that don't actually use it. So the fact that you got your arms and your head wrapped around this thing is just awesome to see. So thank you for that. Thanks for all the background info. That's great. That really helps us. So first thing, you know, sleep is important, and it's almost important as anything else you could possibly do, especially when you're talking about fine-tuning like you are right now. You really get into that gut-brain connection piece that science doesn't know a whole lot about, but we do know that sleep is a big part of it. So if you're tired and you feel it, it's always going to be a better option to take a 20-minute nap, if that's even possible, than reaching for something like caffeine or sugar. Give your body, you know, what it really needs is some REM sleep and some quick refresh instead of another upper. And that, if that means going out to your car at work and just popping back to seat for 20 minutes, it can make a world of difference, believe me. You know, I can't see your food log right now, but 2,100 calories is pretty low. And, you know, I'm not sure what your height is, but I'm guessing based on, you know, your height and your weight, you're probably going to need more than that. And that's if you're a healthy person. You know, all those calculations for what your calorie requirements are is for a healthy person. When you're talking about trying to get and deal with digestive disease, which has components of malabsorption, which has the inability to break down foods very well, which has high inflammation, which could be using excess energy in your body as well, you're probably going to need a lot more than that. If you're eating heaping amounts of coconut oil, you should be up around 2,500. If you need to, you can spread out more and eat like 4 to 6 meals and get at least like 6 tablespoons of coconut oil. That's like 700 calories. Adding the avocado in is really going to help. You could retry the goat's milk yogurt after that. One day struggling with the yogurt is sort of common. That's why we always try to say like 3 to 4 days to really get a good gauge of what's going on. You got to remember that, you know, each cup is around 700 billion CFUs of probiotics. So, you know, try a quarter cup for 2 days and then do a half cup for another 2 days, and then you can really get a gauge of what's going on there and if that's really going to be a long-term trend of regression or if that was just an adjustment period. If your weight loss, you know, is 4 to 6 pounds, it could be water weight. When you switch to eating a really low-carb diet right now like that, that's pretty common to lose that initial water weight. For the potassium and general fatigue, you could always look at some vitamin C powder by Nutricology. That can always help. And then definitely upping your fish oil. But the biggest thing is really you might even go to the extreme of getting like a really high-quality meat scale and weighing your meat after you cook it. And so you can really get legitimate data from FitDay to really understand how many calories you're actually getting in a day.
Yeah, and you actually don't even have to get a high-quality one. I use a $5 one from, like, Walmart or something that, you know, I have to calibrate it on each time, and it's not super fancy, and it's not digital. But, you know, the biggest thing is that you spend some time weighing it, and you really get used to the portion size like Jordan was talking about, I think.
Yeah, I was just going to say, sometimes it's really hard to gauge, like, what 4 ounces of meat really is once it's cooked. You know, that's hard. That was really hard for me to get my head around and really understand what that was.
Yeah, it is. And something that I had to learn as well. And the other thing to learn is that FitDay is not like it's not always right, I guess is one way to put it. Like it's only as smart as what we are as far as putting in sizes and picking the right food, because there's so many different foods in that database that sometimes people accidentally pick the wrong like turkey sausage, or they might pick the wrong beef or something like that, and that can give false indications of not only nutrient levels but also total calories. So that's something to double check as well.
All right, man. Well, should we roll on to some live Q&A?
Yeah, I think that's the best thing to do at this point. If anyone who's on the call right now, if they have any questions that they didn't submit and or questions about what we just answered or talking about, just go up to your questions box there and put them in, and we'll grab them. I think in the meantime here, as people come up with questions and get typing and stuff and put them in the questions box, I think kind of what we heard to sum up a lot of our answers tonight, Jordan, was, you know, I guess we heard a lot of things, but one thing I wanted to go back and touch on was the fact of just listening to your body. Remember, we talk about the subtle clues of what foods do and what supplements do, but Andy talked about a subtle clue there about, you know, being tired, and I think that's one that I think both of us have dealt with quite a bit as far as just really listening to your body and saying, okay, do I really need some sort of sugar pick-me-up, some sort of fruit pick-me-up in the afternoon? Do I need another cup of coffee, or should I just, you know, suck it up and do what my body really needs and take a nap? So I think that was a big thing that I learned.
That's a great point, man. And I think we're starting to get a couple of good questions in here. Let's start with Nate. He asks, thinking about testing dairy, how much do you recommend to start and what? What do you think about that?
Yeah, go for it. Definitely go for testing dairy. If you wanted to go like the ultimate safest way possible, start with butter and really scrutinize where you get your butter source from, because there's actually a lot of fake butter on the market as well. Or you'll find a lot of potentially name brand like Meijer is a big brand up here, but that's like the biggest supermarket around here. But even their butter is not real butter. It has a bunch of additives in it. So the best thing is to find some pastured butter, some organic stuff, something like that. And then that's 98% fat, so you shouldn't really have any problem with that. Then I would move on to whatever else you're looking for. If you really want to try the SCD yogurt, go with that. Or you could, you know, try some cheese first. And if you want to try cheeses first, I think for the most part people do better with cheddar cheese to start with. But I think at that point either cheese or yogurt, that's kind of just a toss-up on what you like to eat and what you think would be best for your diet. I was going to say, I think Sandy had a good question here that you could probably help her with. She's asking if you have some good tips about entering food into fitday.com.
Yeah, Sandy, that's a great point. And, you know, the first tip that I'll say is it doesn't have to necessarily be a religion. So if you just want to, you know, I would encourage you to keep a food journal, right? And if you don't want to do it all in fitday.com, you don't have to. You could just touch base in fitday.com once a week, and that'll give you a good indication of kind of what your average calories have been, what your average nutrient density has been. The other thing to keep in mind is that it's a tool that's going to help, but it's not an exact science, like Steve said. And it's just going to give you a rough idea of how many calories you're eating in a day and then what that breakout of nutrients looks like. So fats and proteins and carbs. In terms of tips, there's a really quick way to do it faster. If you look in the left sidebar when you have a new day up, there's a drop-down menu for common foods that you always eat. So, for example, when I eat my turkey breakfast sausage every day with 3 tablespoons of coconut oil, I can go to that quick drop-down menu and immediately grab turkey breakfast sausage and 3 tablespoons of coconut oil and just drop it right into every day. So that's a really quick way to do it fast if you're eating the same type of foods every day. Always try to get foods nailed down to the weight and then actually do the cooked weight with some cheap scale like Steve talked about. That's the best way to be the most accurate. So, for example, if you're doing like boneless chicken thighs, you know, you want to make sure that you weigh them and you'll see that you have 10 ounces and just do 10 ounces of boneless chicken thighs, you know, baked. And that's going to give you the most accurate results. But all in all, I would just say use it as a tool to look at general trends and averages of what your nutrient makeup is and your specific calorie intakes for the day. But I wouldn't leave anything out either. Even add those spices in there. Every little thing's going to add up, so make sure you don't leave those out.
Yeah, I think that's great, Jordan. And I think the one thing to talk about there is the creating the custom foods. That's a huge thing that a lot of people don't usually do. But as you move into almond flours, the turkey breakfast sausage, different things like that, is use the custom food creation and create it, save it in there, and then you can always just grab it from your recently used foods. Because you're not going to find, like, you know, breaking the vicious cycle, almond muffins are not going to be in there. But you can create them pretty easily, and then you can tell them, like, if you add all the dry ingredients, so like 2 cups of almond flour, 1 cup of raisins, some cinnamon, some eggs or some water or something, you just put that in there, and then you tell it how many serving size you had. So if you made 9 muffins, you just divide it into 9, and then you'll have a muffin, you know, a breaking the vicious cycle muffin.
Excellent. Well, let's move on. I got Joanna here, who we've been emailing with her quite a bit the last few weeks. She did the 5-day diet, but she didn't see any improvement, and in fact ended up with liquid stools by the end of the 5th day. So do we have any idea about what could have gone wrong? And the first place I'll start is just to add that, and I believe she can confirm that she was taking two digestive enzymes with every meal. And I'm going to stick with that unless she says something different. Yes, she did say yes. Okay, so the big thing with the five-day diet is, one, it's really low carb. And two, it has way more fats than most people have ever had in their lives. And that's a big switch. The fats are going to really help as you switch into that low-carb diet to help you switch to how you're converting your energy and using more fats for the energy. However, it's really tough to digest that much fat. And while you were taking the two digestive enzymes at every meal, you did mention that you have a past history of fat malabsorption diagnosed. And you had mentioned that there was an actual prescription that your doctor had given you for a drug that I would hesitate to explore personally. It's a drug that prevents the absorption of bile salts. But what I would do is I would ask you, are you taking betaine-HCL? And the reason I would ask that is because if you remember in session two, I gave a very specific mind map of how digestion works. And what the big takeaway from that session was is that pH level is the most crucial step. Every step of the way is the pH level. It's got to be 2 or below to get shipped to the small intestine at the right time. It's got to be between 7 and 9 for digestive enzymes to even work, okay? And it keeps flip-flopping all the way through your body. So my assumption is if you're still having problems with fat malabsorption that was diagnosed previously, and then you did a 5-day diet like this, which is very high in fat intentionally, and you still struggled with the watery stools is telling me, you know, you were evacuating, you're having horrible diarrhea, and based on what I know is in the 5-day diet, that was likely probably more from the fats than anything else. My suggestion would be to test the betaine-HCL. My assumption is that you probably weren't on it, and you can confirm for me. And I think that my guess is that, if I remember right, you were taking an NSAID steroid, and that might be why you're not taking it at this point. But, you know, that's the thing is you got to get that pH level right in order for all those processes to work. She says that she was taking 1 to 2 betaine with her meals but had not found a personal dosage yet. That's a big thing, too. If you never reach your upper level, you might need to take 6 to 8. You know, I'm assuming maybe you're taking Frida. You may need to take a lot more than that. You may need to take one with pepsin in it, which is going to be more effective. But that pH level being right in your stomach and then in your small intestine is so crucial to – she says she is taking prednisone. She's not scared to try more betaine. Okay, good. So I would focus on finding that upper limit, get that pH level right, and then you should be able to much better process the fats as they go through your small intestine. So I hope that helps. Steve, did you have anything to add?
Yeah, the other thing I would add is we touched on this a little bit in the supplementation talk, but Joanna might be a case where she might actually need 3 digestive enzymes because she knows in the past that she is a high risk for fat malabsorption, and she goes on a high-fat diet in which she's still clearly not digesting anything. So one quick test would be just go one more pill on the digestive enzymes. We know that there's no risk in doing it other than you might take it and nothing might happen and you might have wasted 10 cents on a pill or something. So that would be another test I would try is trying that. And then the other thing is we've talked with people in the past, clients, and just emailing with people who have done the 5-day diet and they saw kind of the same results where they didn't get any better at all. And as we dig and dig and dig, there's really interesting, but even the smallest things such as where you're getting your meat and what you're eating could be causing you to react. So in an instance, we had a lady who was eating a ton of canned tuna, and it had some illegals in it, or it was just canned, and it was causing her problems. And that's what she was eating on the 5-day diet. She cut that out. She was automatically better. So I would say caution all your meats. What do they have in them? Make sure they don't have any of that bone broth, or not bone broth, but the broths, the soy broths, and the gluten broths that they inject into chicken, pork, beef. Almost all the big name brand supermarkets do it these days, and it's is a tragedy, to be honest. You can't even get your meat without without it being bastardized, basically, before you can use it. So check your meat sources. Make sure you're not getting any contaminants there. And I think that's about it as far as things to try. After that, we'd have to just keep digging and see if there's another lifestyle factor that might be a problem there.
Great, man. I think that was good. I think we got two more quick questions, and I'll just rapid fire them at you. The first one is, Sandy asks, what do you normally use for almond flour, which isn't in fitday.com?
That's a great question, and the best part about it is that you can just look at the back of the label on the almond flour you buy and create a custom food called almond flour, then put in the exact ratios of fat, carbs, and protein from the back of the label, and then just use that.
All right, excellent. So last one for the night. So Nate asks, when introducing things like lettuce, do you cook it, and if so, how? Also, things like cantaloupe or peaches.
Okay, that's a great question. And so, I mean, I don't know what Jordan's take is on this, but I've never really enjoyed cooked lettuce, but maybe some people do. I would cook it exactly like you cook spinach and other greens. You could saute it if you wanted, just like cabbage or spinach. You kind of can steam them. You can saute them, you can microwave them, but lettuce is really just mostly water. So if you're trying to like check off all the foods in the phases list, I would say there's no problem skipping it unless you really wanted to try it, because I just don't enjoy it, but maybe other people would. So I'm gonna leave that up to you, but the big takeaway here is you don't need to check mark every food in every phase before you're allowed to go on to the next. If you're, you know, we've color-coded them by how easy they are to digest from top to bottom. So if you're, you know, halfway through phase two and you're looking at the rest of the foods in phase two and you're like, none of these are appealing, just go up to phase three and grab the first food that you like off of phase three that's in that first color, the lighter color up there, and pull that into your diet and see how you do it, because that's kind of how we created it and how it should go. The same thing with cantaloupe or peaches. Peaches can be baked. Baked peaches taste amazing with some cinnamon, especially if you do like baked peaches and like pork or something. That tastes spectacular. Cantaloupe could be cooked as well. Again, that's another food where cooked cantaloupe is a little weird. I only had it once. A grilled cantaloupe is probably the best way to go, just as far as eating it. But the same thing for vegetables applies for fruits. If you're looking at it and you're like, man, I really don't think, you know, I can cut up a plum and cook it. Well, skip plums then and just move on. There's no need to really try it if you don't want to. But plum makes a great sauce, and it's great on meat as well. So, Jordan, you got anything to add on that?
Yeah, I mean, my personal experience with lettuce was just like I didn't eat it until I was pretty much all the way healed, and then I went back to it and started eating it raw, you know, as a bun for burgers and stuff. So, and then same thing with cabbage for me. I just waited, started eating cabbage after I was pretty well healed, and I went right to raw. But I'm sure, you know, I steamed spinach quite a bit when I was just starting out on the diet. So it could be cooked just the same as you would spinach.
Yeah, I think lettuce is one of probably the better foods to try if you're looking to try a raw food. I think it's pretty easy to digest, and it's a great addition to the diet because it allows you to add some crunch and everything. And there's not a whole lot of cell walls there that you have to break down.
I think that about wraps it up. All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been Q&A session number 2 of the Advanced SCD Techniques course. I'm Jordan Reisner with Steve Wright.